online and archived at KFAI.org, the community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired. And when I knew I had to face another day, Lord, it made me feel so tired.
You are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, enlighten you spiritually.
Help me name it. Now I'm no longer doubtful of what I'm living for. And if I make you happy, I don't need to do more. Cause you make me feel. You make me feel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good evening. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, and we're streaming online at kfai.org. And this is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman, and I'm Kinshasha. Root Wisdom from the Elders Circle discusses the numinous, the mystical, and the supernatural world of the metaphysical. It represents the ancient spirituality of our common ancestors, today elders from indigenous cultures and communities house, hold, protect, and practice this wisdom. It is the communal and collective elder circle that passes this knowledge on through the generations. Jacqueline Lady J. Maddox lives in St. Paul, Minnesota, in close proximity to her sons and siblings. A native of Minnesota, Lady J is a 30-year veteran blues broadcaster, broadcasting currently at KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and producing programming at St. Paul Neighborhood Cable Access Television. She has written songs, CD, liner notes, gig reviews, and poetry. Her byline can be found online at Minnesota Blues on Stage at the Twin Cities Blues News. Lady J is a blues performer and percussionist, fronting her own band, Lady J Griot, and her Root Doctors, that focuses on preserving the African heritage of the blues. Her style blends Delta blues with Chicago blues, while expressing the root history of the music in true indigenous storytelling fashion. In 2015, she was inducted into the Minnesota Blues Hall of Fame as a blues historian. Good evening, Lady J.
Good evening, Kinshasa.
Certainly women in the blues. Very, very strong, very, very powerful, powerful women. Yet, testosterone is something that you talked about earlier. And the testosterone certainly gave men center stage. Can you talk to us about the women and the effect women had and have on the blues?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because the first recorded piece of blues was a woman. It was Mamie Smith with something called the Crazy Blues. And I believe they changed the name of it so it could be commercial. I think it was called Harlem Blues. And then they changed the name to the Crazy Blues. The idea of it is the men still posed such a threat. It was a little bit easier to approach the women, probably. And the men, especially if you look at album covers where you see Lead Belly and Charlie Patton, they still look rough and like they just stepped out of the fields, you know, and they did. So the Smithsonian and places like that probably felt like a woman was a little bit easier to approach and she would look a little more presentable. But the women are also the first ones to do the kind of music that I call double entendre. And men did it, but they couldn't pull it off like the women could. And we're talking in the 1920s, 1930s, that music got like big long sliding thing. And My Man Stands Out. That kind of music was really a woman's music way before the men ever did it. It got to be popular, and so men started doing it. Because I don't know if they were resentful that women could do it and get recorded, but they did. And they had an audience. Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey and the ladies that preceded them were still talking the 1920s. But also remember, Emancipation Proclamation was 1864. So within 35 years, you have the turn of the century, the 1900. Then you have the 1920s. My mother was born in 1923. So we're talking 70 years from slavery. Very interesting. So a lot of these people are still remembering their roots, remembering their parents' roots. A lot of the ladies, mothers, you know, some of them are searching for their stolen children, sold off children. But the ladies in the blues, well, first of all, remember that we didn't call it the blues. It was just music to us. It was labeled the blues by someone who decided that whatever the notes were, the half notes and all the other, you know, the melancholy sound or whatever, it lended itself to that side of life. And so they thought being blue or being down, and that's what the music was about. We didn't name it that. Just that's important. Because to us, the music was lively. It was how you got through something, whether it's a divorce, whether it's the loss of a child, whether it's a loss of a parent. You have to survive. And music helps you get through it, just like it does for a shaman. It helps you get through something. The music helps you get through it, and that's what the blues did. So, you know, it's probably in the 1920s that the ladies started taking forefront. Then you started having big, huge bands, orchestras, like Duke Ellington, and his orchestra, which was probably 1929, something like that. He had female vocalists, and all the males play the instrumentation behind them. But even that was a created thing, because the sound that was classical music that came from Europe to America was denied to African-American musicians. Who was going to let some black person play the violin or any of those instruments that came with classical music? They got instruments and created something similar to it. And we call that something jazz. We call it jazz. And that's what Duke Ellington and his band, they all became proficient. And in fact, Duke was one of those bands where if you didn't know how to read music, you couldn't be in his band. Because, you know, he's being Mr. Elegant, of course. And he's teaching these Europeans that we can do it too. So if you can read music, you could be in the orchestra. I hate to tell you how many musicians fake their way through that. There's a great book called The New History of Jazz by a man out of England. His name is Alan Shipton. And this is where I'm getting this information from. He said there were so many musicians that would sit up at night with the guys that could read. Maybe there was like 5 guys that could read, 10 guys that couldn't read. The guys that could read taught the guys that couldn't read, and they would all be sitting there with the sheet music, and they had stayed up all night faking their way through it. So it looks like they could read too. So they could be part of the orchestra. Count Basie's band was like that too. If you couldn't read music, you couldn't be in the band. I don't know if Basie knew how many people stayed up all night with the other guys until they just got it down. You know, they could play by ear too. That was the other thing. Once they heard it, they could play it.
A rites of passage into America was to be as European as possible. And so what we call the blues is not European at all. When I think about Duke Ellington or Count Basie, they wore tuxedos and they tried to be and Duke Ellington was able to be the head of the band because he was so light-skinned. And so the closer to white you were, the more acceptable that you were. And so our English was impeccable. We, as a people, gave up our African names were given names by slave masters. And once slavery was over, we pretty much gave up everything in order to be accepted into white society. It didn't work, but we did. And I'm just trying to figure out, where did the blues fit within all of it? There was such confusion on our part. And at the same time, there was always the issue of class, too, in terms of high-class Negroes and lower Negroes, or I think we used to call them
dark-skinned Negroes. Yeah, that was the difference. Yes, you're right.
And I think we used to call them sediddy.
Yeah.
In terms
of high society, and that word became one of those plantation words, sediddy, but it means society.
Isn't that interesting? The blues was always raw, though. I mean, it was...
Always. Well, think about it in terms of geography. Blues was, let's say, Mississippi, and then right next door to Mississippi is Louisiana. And a lot of the sound that became Dixieland, or because Louisiana music has its own sound. What it has, everything starts with that Delta blues sound, and it is that very raw, either a two-string guitar, because that's all the strings they could find, foot stomp to imitate the blues, a drum in the blues, harmonica that somebody found. And remember, some of that instrumentation is a duplicate of what we already had. We just had to invent something to make that. So somebody might have already known how to play that instrument. They didn't have the instrument itself. So he came up with something close as, you know, and made up something. That sound, Mississippi, it's also in Louisiana. So that when the people started the migration, because there were slaves in Louisiana too, and Alabama and Florida. And when the Great Migration happened and everybody booked and got the heck out of the off the plantations and went to Harlem and Kansas City and Detroit and Chicago. They took that music with them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those gentlemen were musicians, too. But, you know, you play music at night at a juke joint, but during the day you worked your job, whether you were at a slaughterhouse, on the Cadillac assembly line, a porter on the railroad, you played music at night. And those are the guys that would be with Duke Ellington's band or Count Basie's band. They still had day jobs, you know, a lot of them, until Count Basie started going overseas and started making money and all that business. So these are the guys that's why they didn't know how to read sheet music. They were musicians, right? But they didn't know how to read. Some of the other guys did. Guys that were like Lester Young. His father was a musician from way back, probably during the 1800s. His father had a marching band and made all the kids learn how to play instruments. This is in the 1800s, so right out of the Emancipation Proclamation, right out of that. So Lester Young, the saxophone player who played with Count Basie's band, these guys are all learning the higher craft of this jazz so they can work, so they can eat, so they can play. But that doesn't mean they lost their blues. They just, again, couldn't read the music. Some of these other guys are teaching them. You know, they're sitting up in hotel rooms all night long. Nobody's sleeping. You know, they're drinking and learning how to play. So when some of these bands started breaking down, because, again, Duke Ellington and his heyday was the 1920s. That's why they went overseas. They weren't making that kind of money here in America. When they came back to America, a lot of those big giant bands, those orchestras, the big bands started breaking down into smaller units and smaller units and smaller units. And that's where you get swing music and the Winoni Harris music and the Cab Calloway band, because those great big orchestras had to start breaking down because they weren't able to pay everybody. Dance was king. Dancing at the Savoy in Harlem and all those little clubs in Harlem, the Cotton Club and the Savoy and all those places, Small's Paradise. Those places that people would come out to dance. Nobody's dancing to classical music. They're dancing to that configuration that they invented called swing. And it's what the blues guys knew how to do, make that stomp so people could dance, but still play high music because you have your sheet of music in front of you, and how to blend those two things together. So the blues was never gone anywhere. It was there because that's what makes the people move, that makes the people dance. And you're right. Once we get into New Orleans and the New Orleans music and the New Orleans caste system, a lot of the white guys started seeing the black guys playing this music, which was their invention of classical music, and then they started playing what the black guys were playing, the guys like Glenn Miller and so forth, and they started getting jobs. They started working. I know it's really weird, but that's what it is. It's an aberration of what the black bands were playing. Well, the black guys started seeing what the white guys were doing, which was like a milder, light version of what they were doing, and they were getting paid and playing places. So then they started playing like the white guys, who were playing like the black guys, who were playing like the classical music. And it's all just a chase so they can stay employed and they can work.
Programming on KFAI is supported in part by Health Partners. Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical, prescription drugs and dental, plus many extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment and Health Partners depends on contract renewal. More information at healthpartners.com/oneplan.
We're continuing our conversation with musical historian, blues historian Lady J. In our last segment, we talked about how the blues turned into jazz.
and the evolution from there?
The music that kind of stayed bluesy went into vaudeville and went into the toba or the chitlin circuit, as we call it. The toba is the theater owner booking agency, T-O-B-A. And it was all in the South, and that's what really is the name for the chitlin circuit. We call it that because that's what everybody had to eat. Couldn't get in. Jim Crow was alive. And you couldn't, the black performers couldn't, they could play at the hotels, but they couldn't stay at the hotels. They had to eat and stay at either farms or homes of people. Who told me this story? Can't remember. He said they would look for the fattest lady in town and follow her home. the fattest black woman. Or go to a black church, hang around, and find out who's the best cook. Or what is the minister, what does Reverend go on Sunday for Sunday dinner and follow that person? Because they could play, but they couldn't stay. That kind of ties into what I've said about religion and, you know, mysticism, is that people that are religious are people that know that there's a higher power. People that are a mystic or a shaman, they know that there's a higher power, but they've had an epiphany. They not only believe and know, they have had an unshakable experience. And so they can talk about it, probably. But someone who's a magic maker, an energy worker, a root worker, someone who's nuts about it like I am, you know what to do with that information. You believe in it, you know it, you've had an unshakable experience, and then you know what to do with it. See, it's not enough to just know. You got to be able to act on it.
In case you just tuned in, we're talking with Jackie Maddox, Lady J, about her important book, Root Wisdom from the Elders Circle. Talk to us about the Elders Circle.
Well, that's another thing that's interesting about women versus men, is that in almost every indigenous society, women make up that elder circle. Men are there, and maybe it's the older warriors of the tribe or those that have, you know, survived injury or whatever. But in most non-Western worlds, women's opinion matters. And that's enough said about that. In a lot of non-Western world, women, I wouldn't say they're in the role of the chieftain, because that's it sounds too masculine, but they're in the role of the leader of the tribe. And what the women say is what goes. They're the ones who delineate and divide up the food and the resources of the tribe. It usually is the women, because the whole hunter-gatherer society, who's the gatherer? It's the women.
How did this book come about?
Well, that's interesting as well. It was probably 10 years in the making. I actually published in 2021, and I probably started writing, put pen to paper, or pencil, because I write in pencil, pencil to paper in about 2009. So it took me all that time, 10, 11 years, to actually write the book, you know, with the different drafts. You know, you write it first, and then you go back. You go back, you go back, you go back over it. I probably have 12 drafts of this book just because I wanted it to be right. And it took me that many years and that many drafts to get this book. But I tell you, when I sat down with just a black and white composition book and a bunch of pencils and a pencil sharpeners, it just flowed. It just flowed. From the first time I set that pencil down to talk about what it is I wanted to say in this book, I never had a hesitation. I never had a doubt. I never stopped and had to look something up. It just flowed. It just came out of me. Now, going back to spell something correct, you know, you can go back and figure out how to spell, you know, anti-disestablishmentarianism, but you can write it down and then come back to it. And I had editors, at In Black Ink who got me grammatically correct. Like, that sentence is too much of a run-on sentence. Make it two sentences instead of just one sentence. You know, that sort of thing. But the content just flowed. And I swear, it wasn't me. I didn't write it. I was just the vehicle.
What's the most important message in this book?
What we call magic or power or energy is really just self-evolution. Making certain choices in your life to either put you on the right track or help you make better choices in your life, however you want to determine it. It's all just you. When people say, oh, I shouldn't have gone this way home. My better sense told me not to do that. My better judgment said, don't do that. That's yourself talking to you, right? It's all about self-evolution. How to move yourself from one spot to another spot. I will admit, a lot of people can't see that other spot, and they think they're stuck in one place. Then there's a lot of us that can see. You follow, as I did, the light that takes you down that path, and you follow it, regardless of anything else. And you will find that self-evolution, self-actualization, you know, becoming. Who are you today? If you want to be a lawyer, you know, you're 10 years old in school, and you know you always wanted to be a lawyer. You know you have to do everything it takes to become that lawyer. So that 20, 30 years down the road, you're the lawyer you always wanted to be. That's self-evolution. But what that person had to go through all that time until they got there, who knows what loans they had to take out, how many schools they had to go to, how much studying they had to do, what parties they had to give up, you don't know. But they knew what they wanted to do. They self-evolved. That's what the book is about, self-evolution.
Is it your connection with your ancestors that made the writing of this book so easy, and can everyone connect?
I think they can. I think everyone can connect. And maybe it was the ancestors, but I think it was something higher, my connection to something higher. The ancestors exist on a plane that's in between this world, the material world, and the higher self, the greater consciousness. The ancestors are they're still like our parents, our grandparents. They intercede on our behalf. Who are they interceding with? That's what I believe made me sit down and write this book. It said, okay, you studied enough. You understand it good enough. Write it now for the people. Take everything that you have learned about, studied on, or practiced. Put it together, and it'll be good enough. It's never going to be perfect. We're never going to be perfect. Just do it. Don't worry. We got your back.
You talk about walking between worlds. Talk to us about that.
I do it now with ease. And I think people that are creators, creatives, they do it with ease, too. They just aren't aware that's what they're doing. They always have one foot in the creative world and one foot in the material world. You know, you want to paint, but you got to go to work. You know, you got to get them ducats so you can pay, you know, your car insurance, your car note, your house. And then when all that's done, I can finally get to the easel and I can paint. That's walking in between the two worlds. Or, in my case, I have figured out how to live a spiritual life in the material world. It's quite easy to do. Took me a long time to figure that out. 20 years or more, maybe. But I do it now with ease, because it's just so much you do not need to pay attention to.
You say that we should not take anything personally.
That's one. Detach. That's how you do not take anything personal. You got to learn to detach. You can't Let every little thing that happens be about you. It's a form of lowering your ego as well. That's not taking it personal. Things happen. I mean, it's hard not to. We're human beings. We're not all, you know, floating Buddhas and can live our lives on that plane. But you have to realize that not everything is about you. It's not. You know, if I go out here and find I have a flat tire, I'll think, oh, no, I just bought new tires. Why? It ain't about me. Call the tire people up and say, it's about you. I just paid for these tires, $600 in tires. But, you know, there may be a lesson that you need to learn, and you just have to move through it. Life is a test for everybody that's wondering about that. Yeah, it is. Life is a test. You just have to get through it and get to the other side.
Can you share with us more about the cosmic laws of the shaman?
Oh, I'd have to sit here with my book and read all of them. The basic thing is stay in alignment, stay in harmony with the higher power, the universe, great consciousness, your higher self, whatever you are comfortable seeing that entity as. Stay in harmony with that. Do what you know is the greater good. You know, stop acting like, oh, I should do this, but, you know, I don't want to. Do what you know to be the highest good.
We're talking with Jackie Maddox, Lady J, and we're talking about her book, Root Wisdom, from the Elder's Circle. You talk about things that we would be well served to let go of and to give up, for example, beliefs that don't work. Easier said than done. What is the key to letting go of what no longer serves us?
Racism may no longer serve you. It might be something your parents believed in, but you yourself who have grown up in a community full of people of diverse colors and cultures, you know that the things that your parents were trying to teach you no longer serve you because your parents did not grow up in that world, so they don't know, but you do. Mm. You went to school with people that are Muslim and African and Asian and Aborigine. You grew up with people like that, so you know that what your parents are trying to tell you isn't true. So you have to let go of that. Sexism is the same. Economicism is the same. Ableism is the same. Those are things you can let go of quite easily.
How? I mean, it seems, despite it being so many years, it's so in our face, especially that's more
true.
Now.
That is so true. You detach. I know this sounds really weird. It's an actual physical ability to just not attend. Do not give it attention. It might happen more in your body. You know, you say, oh, you know what? Lady J, she's black, and I've been taught my whole life that black people are this and black people are that. But I don't see that with Jackie because I know her. I see her every day. So I'm not going to be like my mama and daddy were. It might take you 2 or 3 months, 2 or 3 years even, to not do it because it's a condition that your mom and daddy taught you. But you have to just stop attending to it. Don't give that mind thought any attention. When it comes up, don't think about it again. Just let go of it. Here, oh, damn. Oh, and look, she brought cake. Oh, okay. I think I'll have some cake. I don't care if she's black. That's not attending to it. Because you got this other thing saying, oh, she's black, girl. You don't want none of her cake. But you like cake. So you go over and you have some cake. You're starting right then to detach from what mom and daddy taught you. And you're attending to the cake, not to the prejudice. It's a difficult concept. A lot of the things in the book are difficult concepts, but they can be practiced. You just have to do it over and over and over again. You just don't give it attention. Where our intention goes is where our attention, two different things. Intention is what you mean to do. Your attention is what you're focusing on, where your consciousness is. Those two things are related. They're interrelated. Where your intention is where your attention is. If all you attend to is crime, then that's all you're going to see. And that's going to be your intention. You can't stand around someplace without the intention of stealing or taking or shoplifting, because that's all your attention is. It's all about crime, or vice versa. Somebody else that can be standing in that same place, and their intention has nothing to do with that. They came there because it was a bookstore and they were looking for books. And, oh, look, that book, right, the Joseph Campbell's new book is there. I wonder how much it costs, and they pull it off the shelf. You're standing right next to her, and you're thinking about stealing it because that's where your attention is. So your intention is to steal. Sally standing right next to you, that's not her intention. Her attention is, how much does it cost? Let me get this. I didn't even know there was still a book in print, and go up to the register and buy it. Her intentions are where her attention is. Then she gets to the register and find out the thing is half price. That spirit working on her behalf, because where her intentions and her attention are. Your intention, because you were going to steal it, just so happens the security guard's been watching you the whole time because you're shady. That spirit working too. Now, do you self-evolve or do you self-de-evolve? Do you learn from that situation or do you just get mad because you got caught? And a lot of times, what we are calling the greater soul, the higher self, is us. The higher power is our higher self. This is weird. You are who you are today because of choices you made 20 years ago, correct? The person who you are going to be in 20 years is informing you today who you are and what you need to do to get to where they are. So in reality, the higher soul, the greater consciousness is you. So that's what integrity is. Being your mind, body, and soul and spirit are all in alignment. You are in harmony. Your body doesn't do something different than what your mind is doing. A lot of people work that way, though. They go to a job they know is evil. I'll just put it like that. I won't say politicians, but, you know, people that live and work in dissonance, they'll never find self-evolution. You have to find harmony.
It'll be a reggae day in May when the Wailers take the Dakota stage on Saturday, May 17th. The Wailers return to the Dakota for a 30th anniversary celebration of their 1995 seminal album, Natural Mystic, The Legend Lives On. They'll also be performing from their latest release, Evolution, a groundbreaking album that blends reggae with Latin and Caribbean influences to create a sound that honors their historic legacy and pushes the boundaries of the entire reggae genre into the future. Tickets for the Wailers can be found at the Dakota's website. Visit dakotacooks.com for more details.
We're talking with Jackie Maddox, Lady J, about her important book, Root Wisdom,
from the Elders Circle. Can you talk to us about the life of the metaphysical?
This way of life requires great discipline, order, and restraint. You have to learn to walk the walk and not just talk the talk. Some wise person once said, "With great power comes great responsibility." And that's just what we are going to explore in my book. You're going to learn how to become a walker in between the worlds. And this isn't a chapter that I call The Way of the Warrior, Tips for Life on the Metaphysical. You are going to learn how to master the skills of being a shaman in the spirit world while living as a warrior priestess in this physical world. By mastering this skill set, you will learn how to modify discipline and responsibility with the practical applications of magic and shamanism. You will see how helping others is really the warrior's way of helping yourself. You will learn how the spiritual aura around the magic maker creates a tangible field of energy that can be projected and directed towards others to bring about healing or to cause harm. You will also learn about the recoil effect when you learn about maintaining your spiritual discipline. That's in the book as well. What you put out into the world comes back threefold. See, this way of life is way different from the Western world and how it teaches you to live your life. You have to actually see life in a different perspective. You live behind the veil. One of the books I really talk about a lot, or one of the authors, his name is Carlos Castaneda, and he talks a lot about the first attention, second attention, and third attention, which is why I mentioned intention and attention. First attention is 9-to-5 life, how you live your life every day from 9 to 5 or in the material world. Second attention is living life in this world, but being aware that there's something else behind the veil. And that veil is the material world. You pretty much lift it up and you look behind it, and that's where ESP is engaged, or people who are empaths or sensitives, people that are creators and creatives and musicians and so forth. That's where you learn to live in that world. You still have your foot in the material world because, of course, you have to eat and you have to, you know, pay your car note, pick up the kids from school, you know, iron your new outfit and wear that. But you live in a whole nother world. You are not part of this, I call it, step out of the social consensus. And that's what's going to be so hard for people. I am not on Facebook. I'm not in that social consensus. Maybe I would be if I wasn't on radio. But if I have something I want to tell everybody, I'll pick up the mic and start talking. Otherwise, y'all don't need to know where I'm going or what I'm doing every moment of every day. And I don't need to know what you're doing. Stay out of the social consensus. You learn how to live as a spiritual warrior. And that warrior self fights the lower self. It doesn't fight other people. It fights against the lower self, so you never drop back down into that mindset that we just talked about, the person whose attention was all about crime and then got mad because they got caught. You have to push away from that, the person who lives in the world of racism and sexism and economicism. You have to push against that mindset, and you're a warrior. You battle to stay in second attention, where you are aware of divinity, you are aware of the sacredness, you are aware that trees are alive, plants are alive, water's alive, the wind is alive. I talk to my car all the time. I've talked to every car I've had, and I've drugged life, more life out of them old vehicles because they're my babies, and I talk to them like that. They're alive. They take care of me, I take care of them. Talk to my plants. talk to my blanket. Things are alive. Things have a soul. Address them. Your neighbor has one too. You have to live in that mindset.
As you have this kind of understanding, does what shows up in your world change?
Yes, it does, because you attract to you. Once you live your life in a particular way, and this I get from Carlos Castaneda, you build up something called personal power, and it is your personal power that draws positivity into your life. The greater amount of power that you, it's like a bank account. The more power you have in your bank account, the more you can draw to you. Because that's another thing about this way of life. You don't use the power. You store the power. Power used is power lost. So you don't go around, just like a martial artist would tell you, you don't go around whipping everybody just because you can. Fighting is your last resort when you're a master in martial arts. You make people leave you alone because you know what you can do. Same thing here. Case in point, my vehicle, it actually died 2 years ago. And I borrowed my ex-husband's car that he had in his garage. Have a great shade tree mechanic guy that put it back on the road for me, and I was driving it. Then I got a message from Springboard for the Arts that I was part of a grant program. And I got some money. It was enough money to buy a new vehicle, and I'm driving it right now. I just had enough personal power. I didn't want to bore you guys with all the details of that. If you see me out and about, I can tell you all the small ins and outs of that. Springboard for the Arts gave me enough money, and now I have my own vehicle. And it's a wonderful car, but I asked the universe for it, not for me, but for my sons, who I'm still carrying. I'm still carting these boys around, whether it's to a hospital, to a doctor's appointment, or simply to Walmart. I still have to haul my sons around. I needed something that I could get them around with. And that's the other thing. It only happens when you are grateful. You got to have gratitude about any little thing. You might pull up at the parking spot and there's still time on that thing. Be grateful for that. Just be grateful, okay? You're hungry, you're at home, you're out of money, you don't know what you're going to do. A friend you haven't seen in eons suddenly calls you up and says, girl, let's go out to lunch. I got to talk. That's spirit working. That's the universe working. Be grateful. That's how it manifests in your life. You always have to stay in harmony with the universe. And sometimes their answer is no. And you have to be in harmony with that too. You might ask, you might pray, you might kneel for the grace and the prana, and they say no. Don't be upset. They got something else cooking. What you want is either not good enough, not great enough, or it's not going to serve you well. Because we're humans, we don't know. Something else is coming that they got ready for you. You have to always stay in harmony with the universe. How you get there is you stay open, you stay formless, which also means you got to drop that ego. It's not about you. It's about spirit. And I think that's what is the difference between people who have seen behind the veil. They are open and willing vessels for spirit, for the light, for love, for music, for art, creativity to come through them. And that's almost always the first thing they say is, it's not me. It's higher power. I'm just the vessel. That's the mindset to have. And be grateful.
Lady J, Jackie Maddox on Health Notes. Please get her book. Be a part of this wisdom, root wisdom. From the Elders Circle, thank you so much for sharing so much of yourself with us.
Thank you for asking. And if people are looking for the book, they can find it at Magus, M-A-G-U-S, Magus Books. You've heard of the Magi, the three wise men that found the Christ child on Christmas Day? Well, one Magi is a Magus, M-A-G-U-S, on Central Avenue in Northeast Minneapolis.
Powerful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That beautiful piece of music is entitled In a Sentimental Mood, Duke Ellington and John Coltrane.
Porgy, don't let him take me. Don't let him handle me and drive me mad. If you can keep me, I wanna stay with you forever. Yes, I love you, Pokey. Don't let him take me. Don't let him handle me with his hot hands. If you can keep me, I want to stay here with you forever. I've got my man. If you can keep me, I wanna stay here with you forever. I've got my man. Someday I know he's coming to call me. He's going to handle me and hold. It's going to be like dying, Poggy, when he calls me. But when he comes, I know I'll have to go. If you can keep me, I want to stay with you forever. I've got my
one and only Nina Simone. I loves you, Porgy.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI-FM Minneapolis-St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org. The community's true voice.
I mean, this is not the kind of music that comes from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
No.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, around the world, KFAI.org, the community's true voice. Hey there, I'm Crystal Wax. It's MSP Sound, back at it again. Sharing all of our favorite local artists and getting to know a few new ones and a lot of new music tonight. How are you? I hope you have having a great day. I hope you had a great weekend. I will not be doing a weather report or a sports report. I don't know. I don't think anyone was asking, but just in case, this is not what is covered here in MSP Zone. Great show tonight. I have a lot of new music to share with you. And an interview in the second hour with Ani EXO. They're about to go on tour. And they just released a new song, and they'll have an EP release coming at their homecoming show post